questions on Jesus as God, the belief in the resurrection, secretaries in early Christianity, and the KJV. Written by Bart Ehrman. Read by Ken Teutsch. Here are some of the scintillating questions I've received recently on a range of topics that I thought more readers would enjoy seeing, along with my responses. Question. Dr. Ehrman, I read a number of your trade books, including How Jesus Became God, and found it really interesting that you showed the increasing exaltation of Jesus toward his current state of being co-equal with God. Your book mentioned the how behind the exaltation process, but I wanted to hear from you if you knew the why. Why did early Christians feel the need to exalt Jesus to that level? Why not be content with understanding him as a divine servant of God, as what the synoptics portrayed? Were there theological difficulties with limiting Jesus to a divine servant? Response. My sense is that as Christians increasingly became amazed at the act of salvation Jesus brought, they became increasingly convinced that he must have been even more amazing than they had first thought, and there was almost a competition among Christian believers to see who could say the most amazing things about him. That kind of thing happened in other settings as well, where the amazing founder of Rome, Romulus, came to be considered by Romans as more than human, the god Quirinus. And Julius Caesar came to be thought to have been translated up to heaven after his assassination, etc. Sometimes this happened to non-political leaders as well, for example, with Enoch in the Jewish tradition, made a great angel, or Apollonius of Tyana in the Greek, made a divine being. People get more and more important in exaggerated terms once they're no longer around. I know of some deceased spouses who have become virtually deified after death, when they were certainly not before. Question. I wanted to ask you about your belief that some of the disciples genuinely believed that they had seen the resurrected Jesus. Given your analysis of the New Testament and its flaws, for example, the fact that it was written many years after the events it depicts, its lack of direct eyewitness testimony, what is the evidence that has led you to make this claim? Response. The main evidence that some of the followers of Jesus believed they saw him after his death is that one of them actually says so, Paul, and he knew others who apparently told him so, Peter and James, for example. And we have numerous independent reports by others who say so. My sense is that this amount of evidence does not make it 100% certain, but A, if it's all wrong, there would have to be some compelling reasons for thinking so, and I don't know of any. For example, the idea that it would have to be a miracle isn't an argument, in my view, since we don't have to think Jesus really appeared to them, only that some of them believed he did. And appearance of recently deceased people, appearances that are genuinely believed, happen all the time and always have. And B, if it's wrong, then there needs to be some more compelling reason to explain how Christianity started. Try as I might, I can't think of one. I can think of and have heard lots of non-compelling reasons, for example, that the disciples stole the body and made it all up, or that Paul wanted to start a new religion, or you can easily come up with other things. But all of them, I think, are far more objectionable, at least to me, than the simplest. They probably thought they saw Jesus and certainly said they did. Question. The questioner is going to be addressing my claim that ancient authors did not use secretaries to compose their writings, only to copy and possibly copy-edit them. I mentioned Cicero as the one exception to me, and I stress that when his slave secretary Tiro did compose letters for him on rare occasions, they were not at all like the letters or essays we find in the New Testament, but were very short form letters. While I agree that 1 Peter was most likely a forgery, I don't think the Cicero was unusual argument is very strong here. Traditionalists probably also agree with legends that Peter went to Rome late in his life. I rather doubt there were many Aramaic-speaking Romans to talk with there, so if, and this is a big if Peter really had converted a bunch of extremely loyal Christians and went to Rome, he might have replicated a lower-class version of the resources Cicero and Josephus had by dint of devoted followers working for free. In this scenario, was some hypothetical Greek writing secretary and translator among Peter's followers? Sure, maybe. In the current era, a new church popped up nearby where I live, in the U.S., a few years ago, planted by some Brazilian independent church with slightly culty vibes. The pastor and the first members literally all moved in as a group from a Florida branch. I'm sure they punched above their financial weight thanks to such donations of free labor from their devotees. Response: I'm not sure what makes the Cicero case not seem unusual. It's just the only instance in the ancient record that I can find. To my mind, that pretty much makes it unusual by definition. Josephus did not have anyone else compose his writings. He only had help translating them into Greek. Even more than that, the Cicero case is markedly different from the writings of the apostles. His letters, for which these things apply, were formulaic and very short, not at all like something such as 1 Peter or James. Of that kind of thing, there is no evidence that I've been able to find. So to say that Peter likely had followers who did this sort of thing, composed his work for him, to me requires some reason for thinking so, other than it's something that makes sense in a modern context. That's especially true when it comes to one person speaking in his native language and someone else listening and composing a highly literate version of it in a different language. It may make sense to us now, but I can't find a single instance of it happening then. That's true of a lot of things we might think make sense for the New Testament. If someone wanted to claim that in John's Gospel, Jesus could go back and forth between Galilee and Jerusalem so often, even though it would be a very long trip, because he had hired a horse and buggy, we'd want to see if that kind of thing ever happened back then. Question: Hi, Bart. I'm not advocating for the KJV. I'm just curious about your perspective on where it falls short for your course goals compared with modern translations. What are the underlying issues with the KJV, and where does it fall short? Response: I tell my students that the King James is the greatest literary translation of the Bible into English ever, but there are serious problems with using it as a study Bible. It is based on poor manuscript evidence, especially for the New Testament, meaning that it words passages differently from how they were originally worded. It includes passages not original to the text, phrases things in ways that modern readers will not understand, sometimes using words they think they do understand when they actually meant something different 500 years ago, and it does not benefit from huge advances made in our understanding of the Bible, literary analyses, archaeological discoveries, historical knowledge, etc., in the years, decades, and centuries since it was produced.